All right. Thank you, RJX and Rabbi Cohen, for having me. It's great to be back at Rutgers. Like Rabbi Cohen said, I'm a Rutgers alumni. I was here for undergrad and for law school. And then after that, I went to Mokon Yaakov and studied there in yeshiva for 2 years. Came back, was at the Edison Chabura in Highland Park for another year or so. Got married, went to Baltimore for 6 years. Gave a talk similar to this about 6 years ago. Came back, published a book on the Torah, which a generous sponsor is giving to every one of you. Every one of you here gets one.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Thank the sponsor, anonymous sponsor. And I wanted tonight to talk to you about how to reach your potential. Oftentimes we hear many pump-up speeches about, oh, I want to, you know, become better. I want to become great. Well, how do you actually do it? How do you actualize your potential? And, you know, people bumble through the world a little bit. They think, well, I want to study this subject. I want to be involved in that. I want to have this job. I want to strive for that goal, that aspiration. But they don't have a unique focus, a unique mission or purpose or a moment where they fully grasp what life is all about, what their purpose is, and what the essence of it is. And so I want to help you identify your unique mission. In philosophy class, we could talk about the meaning and purpose of life. We can all have our own different definition of what that is. But what's your purpose in life? How do you identify that? And that's something that the Torah can help you identify. And it's something that Judaism is, you know, ripe with. You can look at the sources and figure out a rubric to identify that. And it's crucial because you can go through an entire life and be on your deathbed wondering if I actually fulfilled my potential in the world. Did I really do what I was supposed to? Was I the man or woman that I wanted to be? Was I the man or woman that God wanted me to be? And so I'm going to hopefully discuss a framework that's very practical that we can, since it's a little bit more intimate crowd, we can even talk a little bit about it as we get further along in the talk, back and forth. And so I'll bring out some Torah sources and develop it a little bit. There's a Gemara in Chagiga 5b, and it's a little anthropomorphic. It says that God cries over a person who's supposed to be learning, but who's working, and a person who's working when he should be learning. So that's an area of the Talmud, which is, you know, the oral law. And it says that God cries over a person who is working when he should be learning and learning when he should be working. But our sages tell us that it applies far more generally than that to having what's called an inauthentic tachlut. A tachlut's a purpose, an inauthentic purpose. How do you know that what you think you're striving towards is the right thing or the wrong thing for you? How can you know that? Back in the day, we had prophets. We don't have prophets now. We just came out of, you know, Purim, where we had Mordechai and Esther. And they were prophets. You could go to them. You could understand what was going on. They saw, you know, they could read the leaves, the tea leaves that we can't read. In temple times, earlier than that, times of Moses, we had what was called the Urim V'Tumim, which essentially allowed us to sort of identify what we should be doing in the world, and it would help us out. Every so often, there would be accounting when the Jews, the Israelites, would go. They would go before Moses and Aaron. They'd go before Moshe and Aaron. And not only would they be counted, but they would feel like they counted. They would feel like they mattered because they would be able to say, this is your purpose in the world. This is what you should be doing right now. I want you to do A. I want you to do... We don't have any of that. How do you identify that? How do you figure that out? And so I'll say a story, and then I'll hopefully get into, you know, I built it up. I want to give actual advice, Eitzah, on the topic. So, story time. There was a very famous rabbi called the Netziv, and the Netziv became huge. His name was Rav Naftali Tzvi Yehuda Berlin, and he was the Rosh Hashiva of Volozhin, and he had 10,000 students, 10,000 Talmidim. He wrote like Svarim, books all over. A whole bookshelf could be filled with just what he wrote. He was a genius of geniuses. But he didn't start out that way. When he was very, very younger, when he was much younger, when he was little, he was rambunctious. He didn't listen. And he didn't really care so much about his learning. He didn't really want to study. Sound familiar, right? At least to me, at least. for myself, when I was younger, I didn't care much at all about learning, and neither did he. So what happened? When he was 11 years old, true story, this happened. He was 11 years old, and he heard his mother and his father talking. His father just got off, obviously not the phone back in the day, but his father just got off the phone, in quotation marks, speaking to the Rebbe, speaking to the teacher. And the conversation wasn't so good. How's my son's learning? Is it going well? Well, actually, not really. He's not really achieving where he should be. If they had, you know, grades, maybe he had a C. They didn't do grades back then. But he wasn't focused. He wasn't determined. He wasn't driven. So the father says all this over to the mother. And they both decide in that moment that the Netziv is going to be an apprentice. He's going to have to be a shoemaker. They're going to say, at 13 for his bar mitzvah, we're going to have him become a shoemaker. Remember, this is the holy Netziv who became huge. He overheard the conversation. He comes rushing up to his mother and to his father, and he says, Abba Ima, I do not want to be a shoemaker. I'm not going to do it. He knew deep down that that wasn't what his purpose was in the world. He said, I'm not going to be a shoemaker. That's off the table. And they said, but you're not studying, you're not this, you know that. He said, listen, at 11 years old, if you give me a chance, I'll buckle down, I'll study, I'll work hard, and I'll make it happen. And they said, okay, we'll give you a chance. Imagine what would have happened if his parents didn't give him a chance. The Netziv, the holy Gaon, the great Netziv, who wrote hundreds of so many books, had so many Talmidim, he probably would have, when he died, you know, went up to heaven, to Shemayim, and said, and when they ask him, you know, Rav Naftali Tzvi, what do you have to show for your life? He'd say, oh, well, look at this shoe I made. I made this amazing shoe, and this person used it to dance at this bar mitzvah, this wedding. I made this shoe. Look at the eglet, even though an eglet is the little plastic thing on the, right? Amazing. Look at the shoe that I, and they would have said, but what about all those students you're supposed to teach? And then, because it's heaven, they could do anything. A whole, like, you could see bleachers full of people. That would be right there. Imagine all the students that you could have had. And then they would bring out a whole bookshelf, sort of like what we're seeing right here, filled with all of his books and say, okay, so the shoes, but what about the books? We don't want that for our life. And he knew that at 11 years old, that that wasn't his unique purpose or potential or whatever it is that he could actualize. And so we don't want to be going up to the pearly gates, so to speak, at 120 with nothing left to show but shoes. It works the other way too, by the way. That if you're really here to make shoes and you go out and try to write a million books, God and the, you know, the heavenly court is going to ask you the same question. Where are your shoes? Because I put you here to be a shoemaker, because that's also very holy and an amazing thing to do in life. So how do you know when God is going to cry over you for having an inauthentic tachlut, an inauthentic purpose or mission, or when you're going to make him smile? So think about this. And this is the talk. This is what I want to call the talk for tonight. It's called Birdhouses and Blowtorches: How to Identify Your Unique Life Mission in the World. I'm taking a pass. So for a second, imagine that your job in life is to build birdhouses. You go out, you have the best hammer, the best nails. You know wood better than anyone else in the entire universe. Like birch wood, cherry wood, mahogany, forget it. And your job is to build birdhouses. Everybody's coming to you and you're thrilled. You're off the charts every single day making birdhouses, doing the right thing. And then one day you walk by your best friend and you hear a loud noise and you see him soldering away with a blowtorch. And you hear this noise, you see the fire, the flame. You've never seen one in your life. So, oh my gosh, I want that blowtorch. I want that. Look how amazing that would be to have that. Wanting the strengths and the characteristics of others. Look at that blowtorch. How amazing would it be to have that? Now think about it. What would happen if a person who works with wood didn't like his hammer and nails? He wasn't thrilled with the package that God gave him, his unique talents and abilities. I don't really like what I have. I want what that person has. I want that blowtorch. What would happen? If he used that on any of his items, they would be burnt to a crisp. So I like to use this mashal, this analogy, to show us that when we understand deeply what our unique strengths are in life, what our talents are, jealousy disappears. Why? Because you know deeply what you have. And what you have is awesome. And what every single person in this room has is awesome. And there isn't a person in this room that has the same strengths or talents as anyone else. Okay, sure, you might want to say, I'm brave, I'm strong, this is great. But all of your unique talents that God gave you are packaged just for you. That's the first window into knowing how to become the true you, your best self. And what's amazing about this is that it's not like Tony Robbins or some, you know, positive psychology class. You know deeply that if you believe God exists, you understand that there are just strengths and talents in a package of who you are that was given to you divinely. One could say that maybe they were genetically passed on, but let me tell you something. As a father with kids, you don't always get to choose the strengths or talents that your kids have. And whatever they ultimately have is whatever God gave them. And so are we going to build birdhouses or crave and strive after blowtorches? So what I just passed out is a Venn diagram that I think is one of the most amazing frameworks to look at life at. And if you can really grab a hold onto it, you can totally change your life. I'll take questions after completely. Okay. I hope to go through everything on there. So one of the biggest pieces of the puzzle is what's right in front of you right now. And I've been told that there are other spheres and there's other circles that other organizations or faiths have, but this comes from the Torah specifically. And that is probably half the battle right there, recognizing that this is not just my idea, but this was actually from the Chovos Levovos in Shara Batavchan chapter 3. And this whole framework I'm about to reveal came from my Rebbe, Rabbi Gershenfeld at Machon Yaakov, who gave it over to Rav Yosef Lin, who gave it over to me, and many, many others. And I hopefully will be able to give it over to you, and you can hopefully change your life with it. And so there are three circles in life in this Venn diagram. That's it. Your strengths and talents, your passions, and what the world needs. Get one to Rabbi Cohen if you can, so you can see it. You have your strengths and talents, what you're good at, your passions, what do you like doing? And what does the world need? Your unique mission and purpose, what God put you here to do, lies at the intersection point of that Venn diagram. That green that I colored in for you, because I couldn't get the color on the printer to do it, so I manually did it for y'all. Your strengths, your passions, what the world needs. So let's just try to understand and unpack this a little bit more. There's a very famous book called The Path of the Just. Some of you have probably heard of it. It's called The Misil Yishon. And in there, the Ramchal tells us that the path to piety is not one singular path. In the same way that I said that the Netziv, who would he have been if he only had his shoes? So to the shoemaker, if he had all those books. Because the path to piety is different for every single person. But it fits the rubric. It fits the mold. Your strengths, which are going to be different than everyone else's. Your passions, which are going to be different than everybody else's. And what the world needs, which is how you identify your place in it. So let's unpack that. What are strengths? And what is that mission? Oh, Masil Shasharim says, your chovato ba'olamo. What is your obligation? Not just like, what's cool to do? What does God want from you? What's your obligation in ba'olamo? And it doesn't say in the world. It says in his world, meaning not God's world, that's the big H, but like in your own, his or hers world. We're all our own world. When you identify what your strengths and talents are, and when you know what you're passionate about, and when you know what the world needs, you'll know what you should be doing in life. So I want to open it up just for a second, or a little bit, to have a small discussion on what are strengths. Because let me tell you something. We live in a world where everybody can say what they're bad at, and everyone downplays what they are so good at. I have a friend of mine who's a phenomenal artist. And I'll look at it and I'll say, that's like, I could put that above my fireplace. He's like, eh. I'm like, what do you mean, eh? He's like, eh. It's just a hobby. Just a hobby. But that's beautiful. Oh, just because you don't want to decide to make money at it doesn't mean that, like, maybe the thing that God wants you to do in life doesn't involve making money. Do you think about that? Maybe you, of course, have to make money. Of course, go out and work. And of course, figure out your mission there, because the world is made like that. It's Minhag HaSholem. It's the way of the world that you have to have, you know, money to live. But maybe your purpose in life doesn't involve your job. Mine doesn't. I hope to think that this involves it. This is a part of it right now. And so in school, and this is a very deep point, in school we're taught how to do, but not how to be. I can learn macro, I can learn micro, I can do all the economics, I can be, you know, a physicist, I could be an astronomer, I can know all the topics that are external. And then positive psychology came around a little bit to now tell me, okay, maybe I should look internal. But even that is still done from, like, over here. And there's no real internal work done. That's just like, what's the philosophy of how to be a happier person? Tal Ben Shachar, positive psychology over at UPenn. But, like, how often do you figure out what you're supposed to be doing? And school is teaching you how to make money, which you need to do. You need to get a job. You need to figure out that path of life. But how about how to be happy? Because this right here teaches you how to be happy. This teaches you how to not be jealous. This teaches you what you're supposed to be doing. And when you ring all the chimes of what your strengths are, what you're passionate about, and what the world needs, you won't have to say, oh my goodness, look at him. He's so great at A, B, and C. Or look at her. I can't believe she does that. So let's go around the room. What's a strength? What's a talent? Nathan, I'm going to start with you. Give me a strength. Give me a talent.
Like a personal one or just...
Anyone. And general strengths, nothing personal now. Just give an example of what you think a strength is.
Creativity.
Nice. So tell me what creativity is.
The ability to come up with ideas that no one else or that aren't common.
Nice. Or to possibly also see something in a way that another one doesn't. Nice.
Right.
What else?
Communication.
Beautiful. And that's huge. In marriage, in life, relationships, everything. As a therapist, as a teacher, if you can communicate, that's a big strength. What else, guys? Just a little crowd participation.
Yeah. Ambition.
Nice. Ambition when used properly, right? Ambition can help you get somewhere. It can help you write a book. It can help you, you know, build a building. It can help you own a company. It can help you do anything in life. Great.
Say emotional intelligence.
Emotional intelligence. Nice. For sure. For sure.
Sympathy.
Nice. Sympathy. Sympathy. Come on. Who else?
Athleticism.
Sure. Being athletic could be a tremendous strength. And that's an important piece. Don't think that it has to be something that's not so specific. Like a musician. A musician. The ability to compose music. The ability to play music. We might not have an exact word to nail it down to. That's a strength, for sure. So there's also, yeah, anybody else?
Logic skills.
Yeah. Absolutely. The ability to critically think, to put, you know, A and B together.
Patience.
Patience, for sure. Bravery, honesty, integrity. A person who can have the ability to judicially look at something, justice. A person who, you know, walks around the world saying, that's not right, it should be like this. That's a strength when used properly. A lot of these things can also be used to an extreme, you know. But you have to find the middle, the golden mean, so to speak, the Rambam's middle way, the middle path, which Aristotle borrowed also, or however you want to look at it. You have to see right in the middle and understand what you're supposed to do. And so when we understand our strengths and we don't just downplay them, that's the first piece of the puzzle. And without that, you honestly will just bumble through life And you could be told by your mother or your father that you got to be a doctor, because, like, how could you not be a doctor, Bob? Or you have to be a lawyer. I can't believe you're not a lawyer. Or it might not even be external. It might be internal. Wow, all these other people are successful because they're accountants or because they're ballet dancers or because they're doing A, B, C. Or worse, you'll look to the outside world of celebrities, which if you actually look up close to the lives that they have, sadly, their personal relationships fall apart. Sadly, they're not as intelligent as you think they are. And sadly, they end up putting out a front of who they have to be instead of who they really are. And it ends up being very inauthentic. God cries over that. Chagiga. 5B. You need to be true to yourself. But what is yourself? Who are you? How do you figure that out? It takes a lot of thinking. You have to reflect. And the world outside, and Nathan and I talk about this all the time, the world outside is so loud. It's loud. You have billboards, signs, buses, phones, everything, music. And oftentimes you do want that. You need the noise. But oftentimes you need to quiet it down and just tune it in, tune it out. And ironically, even Shabbos can be loud, right? Even Shabbos can be loud. I'm going to daven, I have my meals, I'm with my buddies, I'm singing, I'm dancing. Did God enter your Shabbos? You know, you have to think for a second. And even if you don't do Shabbos, just, did I take time to think about who I want to be? What's my goal in life? What's my ambition? What am I charged with? We all have a mission in the world. How do I know that? Because we all have unique talents that were God-given. Why? He could have given us all the same strengths and talents, but he didn't. We're not all robots. We're not all machines. We're not all angels, which do the same exact things. They do whatever mission God specifically said you do, and then that's it. They're done with their one little talent, their one little strength. We have multiple missions in life that's going to be driven through one ultimate purpose. What about a passion? What's a passion? Oh, it's also worth noting, not only are your strengths and talents divinely ordained, but they'll stay with you always. They never change. You just have to identify them. You just have to figure it out. And so that's part of the fun of life. The more strengths and talents you find inside yourself, ask your friends, ask your family, ask a mentor, a rabbi, whoever you trust to figure out that little side of you that you don't know. Or perhaps, because our low self-esteem, the world that we live in, where everybody beats us down, whether we're looking at a magazine that shows us an image of what we have to live up to that isn't actually true, or we're looking at somebody else that, like, oh my gosh, look at who they are. I wish I could be that. Ask your friends who love you, the people that care about you, and say, what am I good at? Take some time out to think about that. What am I good at? Because I'm good at something. It's got to be a lot of things. And if all I see are bad things about me, something's really wrong. And if also all you see are really good things about you, something else is also wrong. You don't want to be arrogant. But you need the middle. And I'd rather you be that person right now. Think of all what you're good at first. And realize that it'll stay with you forever. It just might show itself differently. An example of that. A while back, I loved punk rock music. I still do. Ramones, Dead Kennedys, Sex Pistols, The Clash. The whole nine yards. Real ones, guys. Not like Green Day and all that. Real punk, okay? And I would go to shows. And in shows, you dance in a mosh pit. And you have fun. And you dance around. I actually was pretty good at it. I had a strength of dancing very nicely in a mosh pit without hurting people. And doing it properly. Because there's like pit etiquette, you know? You have to do it properly. So I'm a Torah observant guy now. When in the world am I going to go to a mosh pit? I don't. But at a wedding, there's something called shtick. And at shtick, that's when everybody's in a big circle. The bride and the groom are sitting down. And then you have people that come up doing silly things. Some people come up in costumes, this and that. And I just dance. And I jump really high and I do crazy things that nobody would expect. I won't do it for you here. You have to get married. You have to invite me. But that's how you do it. Why? Because that's a strength that's deeply rooted in me. But it goes even deeper than that. It's not just the dancing. It's the wanting to make people happy, which is the passion. The passion of saying, I want to make somebody happy. How do I do that? At a wedding, it's by dancing in front of the chatan and the kala, which is a mitzvah. It's a mitzvah to do that. So now let's move to passions. I'm good on time? Okay. Passions. Passions will change. They will, invariably. But the root of the passion won't. Dancing at a wedding. It's a strength, but I also love to do something that helps people. That change, that won't change. That'll stay the same. But the way in which I want to help people or the way in which I get excited about it will. So what's a passion? Let's talk about that a little bit. What can somebody be passionate about? So, in this generation now, foodies. People love their food. And you know, some people laugh, some people are like, no, I'm a foodie, man. I like my avocado this way. Like, you didn't know it has to be ripe. Just listen, okay? But some people really get into it. And a foodie is a person that really has a passion for food. You might think that's very surface level, but if they did enough growth, internalization, and work, they'd realize something deeper underlies that, that will stay with them even after the fad of being a foodie is gone. So what's the passion? There's people who are passionate about music, passionate about athletics, passionate about all sorts of things. So let's just put our heads together for a little bit to discuss what we think a passion is, based on what I fleshed out over there. It doesn't have to be what you're passionate about, but just what's a passion? Yeah.
I think it's something you would do even if nobody forced you to do it.
Nice. I like that a lot. And oftentimes you find out that the moment you do what you're passionate about for money, it's you cease to be as, I won't say totally, but as passionate as it used to be about it. Once you start getting paid to do the thing that you were excited about, oh, well, now I have obligations, I have clients, I have to do this, I have to do this. It's different, yeah? So that person who loves to bake and is that foodie and says, well, you know what? I can be that person that helps make the world a healthier place. The passion is to help people be healthier. But once you marry that up to getting paid for it, we go back to what I said in the beginning. Maybe what the world wants from us isn't going to be, maybe what God wants from us isn't going to be ultimately what you make money doing. And so you're right. It could be something that you love doing that isn't obligatory, that you don't have to do it in a certain sense. Meaning there's no worldly forcing of it to happen. Cool. Yeah.
So this middle ground shouldn't be your job?
Could be. It absolutely could be. But it's okay if it's not, is what I'm trying to say. I want to like break a stereotype that you find all over academia, which is that everything in life is about your job. I grew up that way. I went to law school. I don't do law anymore. I'm a business owner of two businesses. I like to do outreach. I like to be involved in this thing, you know, that we do over here called Talking About Growth. I wrote a book. And my mission and purpose lies when you see the commonality between all those things.
Yeah, but you're saying it could be your job. Should it be your job or no?
I think it's a very relative answer for every person. For example, if you wake up in the morning excited about your job, then it's very possible that your meaning and purpose is your job. I'm not going to tell you whether or not you should go out of your way to make sure your job is the thing, because that's painting, that's shooting the arrow and painting the target around it. That's not actually authentic. But if you have done enough work to figure out these three areas and your job fits in this green area right in the middle, that's perfect. In other words, don't go out of your way to make your job fit the mold. Figure out what naturally fits the mold, because that's what God gave you, your strengths and talents, and then see.
Yeah, but if it's your job, then you're doing it for like an obligatory purpose as opposed to like you're passionate about it.
But you could be passionate about that obligatory purpose too. I think that he's right without a doubt. But there's also times that you can still find something that you're very passionate about. I've had very good professors, very good rabbis who get paid to do what they do, but yet they're still very passionate about it. When you get passionate about the money, that's a whole different world. But when you're passionate about that, it's okay to get paid to do that, no problem. So what else? What other passions can we think about?
Something that when you do it, you forget about everything else.
Nice. So there's a book called Flow, which is so crucial. And it's a book that everybody should read. And it's called Flow. And it's an idea where once you start focusing in on something, time kind of disappears. You just get involved in something and it's just like, oh my gosh, it's like midnight. It's like, what? And you don't even realize it, but you got in such a flow of what you were doing that you just, there was like a lapse of time. And when that happens, you know that you've hit on something. Something that is probably that something you're good at, something that you're passionate about. I don't know about what the world needs, right? That's going to be a different conversation. We'll get there at the very, very end. And that also will change. Because remember, God put us all here in this time frame. At this point in time, right now, in America. He could have put us anywhere in the world at any time or never even have made us. But we're all here, right now, in the world, something there is you know, you got to feel that. You got to think about that. Why am I here now? What uniquely can I contribute to society in 2022 versus in the time of Moses? We're not there. Or later down the line in the times of our great, 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 who knows what. So that's a passion. When we know and identify something that fires us up. And so what's the Torah definition of passion? It comes from the word cham, which is hot. We see that all the way, it's always good to go back as far as you possibly can to the first appearance of a word. And forgive me if I'm wrong, but I think cham, first time it appears, is the name of one of Noach's kids. Noach's kids. Cham. And what happens? He's very passionate. He's a fiery guy. And that's the source of it. Whatever ends up happening to him, you'll see in the Torah. But cham means hot, fired up, passionate about. What fires you up? What gets you excited about life? Do you love going to class? Great. If you don't, it's probably not what you're passionate about. Do you like to give speeches? Or do you hate public speaking? You know? What do you like doing? That's mostly going to be what you're passionate about. And it's crucial to know, you might be really, really good at something, but you might hate it. You might hate it. And you might be really, really passionate about something, but you might have no talent at it. I'm not the best singer, but I love to sing. You know? It's something just like that. Yeah.
Do you think you can grow into, like, a passion?
Yes.
Or would that be a hobby? Yeah.
I think hobbies can be passions, too. I think passion is the most global way of looking at it, and a hobby absolutely can fall within it. And the goal here, I don't think, is to totally just be all about labels. I want to make sure that everybody can identify what it is that where the personal growth work is. Because it's crucial to identify who you are inside. And like I said, in school, we learn about all about these externals of like, what I'm going to do. Well, who are you? Who are you? You're nothing more than the bundle of strengths and talents that God gave you, what you're passionate about, and your free will decisions for what you do in the world. And when we identify those types of things, we can achieve our ultimate mission and purpose and have confidence that we're doing it. Because there's also people who live their life and they just have no confidence about what they're doing. But when you know that you're deeply good at something, that you love what you do, and there's this hole in the world, like there's a lot of holes in our world right now. How do you fill that with what you're good at and what the world needs? It's not easy to figure out, but when you have, there's just some simcha, there's just a joy, a happiness that you have in you. You're not, you have no selfishness about what another person's doing because you're so chill about what you have. So just two examples of people like this so that we could get it clear. We could also even talk maybe about who these types of people would be. But I know two. One, if you've ever been to Deal, New Jersey, or Long Branch, is Yaakov Shweki. He's a famous singer. Does anybody have any idea who he is? So if you've met Yaakov Shweki, he's one of the most amazing people in the world. I've davened with him a few times, and he's great. And I think Yaakov has it down. I really do. What's he good at? He's good at music, and he's good at people. What's he passionate about? Music and people. And what does the world need? Positivity. It's not entertainment, right? It's positivity. People are negative. They're down. They're not happy. They're not satisfied. And so what does Yaakov do? He comes into a room, and if he's engaging with you, you're the only one that he's like thinking of in that moment. He's all about you. Whether it's him on stage for every single person out in the audience, or whether it's just you right there as you're saying, hey, how are you today? That's what I'm talking about. He took his passion for music, which he's good at, he married it up with, we need more positivity in the world. And he does that on a daily basis. And he lives a holy Torah life too, to boot. The second is a very, very different strain. It's a Rav, a rabbi who just recently left the world. One of the greatest rabbis of our generation, hands down. And his name was Rav Chaim Kanievsky. Now, if you know anything about this man, he is not like Yaakov. No offense, Yaakov, if you're listening. He was the greatest Torah sage of our generation. When we say he learned Kol HaTorah Kula, the entire Torah, like you see this room, everything. He learned everything, and he did it every year. He made a siyum on the whole entire Torah every year. We're talking about Tanakh. We're talking about the Oral Law. That means the Talmud Bavli and the Talmud Yerushalmi. We're talking about all the Mishnahs, all the Brises, all the Tosefta's, all of everything, the Zohar, all of the Shulchan Aruch, every part of Torah you could possibly think of, this man learned it all in a year. Every year. And not only that, and he lived in Bnei Brak, and he was the Gadol Hador, he was the great one of the generation. And he had people. In addition to all this Torah learning, okay, that's great, he could be not anybody. You could learn a lot of Torah. But what else did he do? He had people lining up at his door so he could give them blessings, so he could answer, you know, their questions on Torah or on life and how do they approach the world. And he was so judicious with his time that eventually he had to calculate out, well, wait a second now, I want to make sure that I'm learning Torah, but I want to give to everybody. How do I judiciously figure out that there's 300 people waiting for me to just say bracha v'hatzlacha? What should I do now? And he shortened it in a way that was respectful, and everybody understood that it wasn't diminishing his approach to them in any way. And he just says, or used to say, buha, buha. And what's the difference between bracha v'hatzlacha and buha? Probably a second. But 300 seconds was everything to Rav Chaim. That was more Torah he could learn. That was more people he could help. So, what was his strengths and talents? What was he passionate about? And what did the world need? He was incredibly amazing at learning. He had the mind for it and for helping people. And he was passionate about it. He did it every single day of his life, day in, day out. Like it was natural to him. Because it was. And that's what you got to look for. What aren't you striving to get? What do you just have? Part of life is not striving for other things. It's realizing what's really inside of you. And then what the world needed, the world needed to go to Lador, somebody to go to. And now those are two examples of people that I think are just off the charts amazing at doing this in life. So this question for everybody might be a little bit harder to identify, but who do you think in life fits the bill? Who do you think has their strengths? Who do you think does what they're good at in a way that they're passionate, that helps the world achieve what it needs to achieve? It's a hard question, right? It's not easy. It requires knowing the strengths of other people, what they're passionate about, what the world needs, number one, which isn't so simple. And also has to, and I think the silence in the room, although it's sad, it's truthful, right? How often do we find a person like this? I had to give you like one of the greatest musicians in the Jewish world right now, and one of the greatest rabbis that ever lived. I want to be like one of those people. And I know everyone in this room wants to also. So what do? And the work starts now. When you leave this room, the world is going to get infinitely louder. That volume is going to be up there. Your phone is going to start buzzing. Your WhatsApp is going to go. You're going to have this project, this homework. I'm going to go to the bar with my buddy. I'm going to have this, you know, encounter with my friend. And all those might be fine. But it's loud. You need to take pockets of time in your life to think on these things. What am I good at? What does the world need? And so I think the building blocks of figuring this out is twofold. One, it's quieting the world, taking time out of your month to just say, for 5 minutes, I'm going to think, what am I good at? You know what? I'm going to ask my buddy on the bus or whoever you talk to on the phone. You know, do you think I'm good at this? Only a person you can trust, because that's just weird to just say, hey, am I good at this? But like a real friend, what am I good at? What am I good at? Write it down. And then, what am I passionate about? And if you haven't figured it out, that's okay. That's the work of life. It isn't automatically there for you. I don't know all of my strengths, and that's part of the fun of life, is identifying what they are so I know what I can do to serve God better. Or, if I don't follow that path, so I know how to just live a happier, holier life. And so I want to close with this, and I'll take any questions that we had, with basically a pump up. Everybody in this world is amazing. Everybody in this room is amazing. Every one of us here has a unique bundle of strengths and talents that we might not have even been aware of. We might have just been living a life thinking that they're normal, that's okay. But that's what God gave you in that unique way. And you have to know that you're amazing. Especially when the other world outside is going to say you're not. Or even the world inside, your own inner circle of people might be a little toxic. I've certainly had a couple of friends in my lifetime that were not exactly the best for me. And they always would, you know, push me in that direction or say, no, no. And then you realize I have to step back from them. So quiet down the noise, realize how great you are, and go out and live the life you should. Thank you for listening. Anybody got any questions?
I mean, I feel like there's many times where, like, someone can be really good at something and, like, be able to contribute, like, in that particular area, but they would also really hate that particular thing.
It's true.
So then, like, what do you do in that case to, or, like, what Great. Else would, what other approach would be taken to, like, not have such a resentment against doing the very thing that you're both good at and, like, is needed?
Phenomenal. So it's very hard. And so for all of these questions, I defer to a rabbi or a mentor of higher quality than who I am. But I don't want to just say that. There's two answers, really, I think, to the puzzle. One is that you can realize that maybe that's not the area that is your unique mission in life. Meaning, if you really, even after trying, figure out that, yeah, the world needs it and I'm good at it, but I hate it. I'm not there yet. Even after trying to work on it for a few years, then maybe that just wasn't what God gave you. Because you're supposed to figure out what you're passionate about that will use those two. First answer is, maybe that's not really it. Second answer is, maybe it really is. You just got to do more work to get passionate about something. Find all of the nuanced intricacies in that thing, whatever it is, and get more passionate about it. It's either a yes or a no. It's going to be binary. It's either going to be, yes, this is going to be the thing that rings the chimes that I get excited about in the morning to do, and I'm good at it, and the world needs it, or it just isn't. And that's okay. And you could do plenty of things like that and be okay. No one's saying that you have to do everything to the exclusion of your purpose. It's just once you figure out the thing that is your purpose, that is your meaning, or even a little bit of it, that's what fires you up. That's what gets you excited about life. That's what gets you not jealous. That's what gets you to be a happy person. And that's when you know that you're doing the right thing. And that's when you know that all of this, on a deeper Torah level, is what gets you to Dvekis, which means clinging to our relationship with God. Because he sees, I gave you this specific talent and strength and this passion, and you found it in this big game of hide and seek in the world. You found me, and you found me in the strength that I have, in the strength that I gave you.
Why are we not able to work on, improve, or change our strengths and talents?
Why are we not able to work on, improve,
or change our strengths and talents?
Well, I didn't say the first two, right? Without a doubt, you can have a diamond in the rough, and you can definitely work on that. In fact, I would argue you should go out of your way to improve upon your strengths, right? If you don't take your strengths and see that they're in you and that you can refine them, if you see, for example, that you're a good public speaker, but you really are like, I'm nervous, but it just took like a little nudging and a few more speeches along the way to be a good public speaker, you should do that. Mm-hmm. Or if you see that you are very sympathetic and you only have one person that you really, you know, help out in the world of sympathy, and you're just like, it might just take a little nudge in the direction of being more sympathetic. Remember, we're not talking about having, we're not talking in this case about deficiencies. I'm talking about strengths and talents, because it's through those that you find the real you. We all can figure out what we got to work on in the world of those types of things. But Rav Yosef Lin talks about the analogy of a hot air balloon, where if you have a hot air balloon literally lying on the ground with its straps, you know, and it's nailed down before it can go anywhere, if you cut all those ropes, nothing happens. Those ropes are your negative traits. Those are the things you're not good at. If you cut all those, the hot air balloon doesn't go anywhere. But once you get the fire of that hot air balloon lit and it's going, it soars up to the sky. And those ropes, by the way, they can get removed. Because what you're passionate about, what you're good at, and what the world needs ultimately eliminates all of the focus on those negative things. So I submit that you definitely can work on your strengths and talents. Where I do push back is that whatever you got's what you got, you know? You could be good at something, and what you're good at might be getting good at things. Meaning, a person could say, I just really want to be a good musician. Like, I really want to be a good musician. I wasn't given the natural talent for it, but I really want to do it. And he works, or she works, and she's really dedicated to making it happen. And you know what? It does. But the strength all along was consistency. The strength all along was tenaciousness. The strength all along was dedication and devotion. And that's the idea. Get to the root. Get to the root of what your strength is, because then everything else blossoms from it. And so, like I said, I'm not the guy to tell you what your strengths are. You are. Your friends are. The people that you trust and love. Your parents, maybe, depending on your relationship with them, could be helpful. Life experience. And sometimes just journaling or thinking about, what did I do way back in the day? Or what am I going to do right now? How did my day go? What did I do for this person? That you can start seeing what you're good at. And it's just sometimes blatantly obvious when you're really looking at it, when you're really lowering the volume on the world and just thinking about it. Yeah.
So how would you go about identifying this third aspect of what the world needs?
Perfect. And that's the one we didn't talk about. I'm glad somebody asked on that. Very good. What does the world need? Well, I think sometimes it can be very obvious, not to get too political, but the situation in Ukraine is one great example. It's horrific what's happening over there. Peace. Our world needs peace. It's been needing peace forever. It's been needing peace for ages, you know? And it's a Torah idea. Back from Cain and Abel, the world needed peace. Arguably, even Adam and Eve, the world needed peace. She made mead from that fruit. What do you... you know? Torah idea. World needs peace. And so sometimes it could just be by opening up your phone and scrolling through the news. Or other times it's being creative. And it might be very, very nuanced. It might be, you know what? I realize that, you know, there's a few people in my class that don't really do so well. They don't really excel in this topic. And I am friends with them. I happen to excel well at this. You know what I think I'm going to do? I think I'm going to just ask them if they want to, you know, they want to have a study group together. And we'll study. Maybe that's what the world needs. You don't have to think saving the whales. I don't want you to think that you got to save the whales. Because some of us might have a very nuanced tachlis, a very nuanced purpose. It could be that I'm supposed to be the person there that fills that gap. So in other words, what's the world need? Anything that you've identified that might be a gap that you could bridge, any type of hole that needs to be filled. And I know those are very, very general, but I think we could all figure out that there are global things that the world needs, and there are local things that the world needs too. Does that help? Okay. I'm all yours, guys. We can even branch out the different topics. Yeah.
I was just saying, I think that the world needs like everything. So that,
nice. So it's
really whatever you contribute. Like, if you want to be an architect, like the world needs houses. You know.
True
so,
that.
Like,
true really that.
Everything.
And I think that's why it seems a bit more obvious what the world needs. But again, what's also very beautiful and how this is all Torah and not Tony Robbins, no offense, Tony Robbins, but you're here for a unique reason. In 2022, at Rutgers University right now, you're not way back in the day and you're not with the Jetsons, who knows what's going to be in many, many moons from now, right? What does the world need in your door, in your generation? Because that's what makes you uniquely special, uniquely beautiful, and exactly who you're supposed to be. And so sometimes it'll be a thread, like I said, from, you know, from the beginning to the end, which is peace, whether it be all the way from Adam and Eve until the times of Mashiach. May it come soon. But like, it's I think that one comes a little bit more intuitively, but we could still talk it through also if you want. All right, guys, thank you so much for having me. It was absolutely awesome.